Accession number 11206, Reel 13.
Mr. T. Thornthwaite, Reel 13. What were your first impressions of Malta, Mr. Thornthwaite?
Well, the first impression is when we sailed into the towards the harbour, we could see the akak bursts in the sky all around. And I don't know if you, as you know, the Malta had one of the greatest barrages they had during the war. They used to put this barrage over the Grand Harbour. And as we sailed into the Grand Harbour and the bombs was dropping and this blooming akak going and everything, there was a lovely welcome. But they rushed us off, as I say, onto the buses, and we're seeing all the bomb buildings and everything, the rubble and everything. And we're only too pleased to get away from the Grand Harbour. That was my first impression of Malta. And then as we moved away from the Valletta, going up towards Rabat, seeing all the bare ground with the walls all around and the sangas and the white stone houses of the Maltese. Didn't look too bad once we got away from the bombing. We rose up to Rabat area and, as I say, we went in tents and it was good to get off the boat and get in onto dry land again and get settled down.
Did you know much about Malta? Had you heard much about Malta up to this time?
I never heard. I don't think I could have told you where Malta was before we were told on the boat when we were going on the when we went from Alex. We didn't know where we were going, and we just told when we were at sea we were going to Malta.
You didn't feel that it was going to be kind of a nice, quiet life, did you?
No. Of course, on the way there, you see, the naval personnel told us all about Malta. They'd been doing runs, because this Brackenshire was a very fast merchant boat. And they enlightened us of what it was like in Malta. You see, you get bombed from morning to night. Your food, you get very little food and all the rest of it. So we got sort of warned of what to expect in Malta. And we, as I say, there was three companies. The other two companies, which included the headquarters of a company, they followed later on the Breconshire. And the Breconshire was sunk when they come through. So they lost all the carriers and everything. So the...
Which company were you in at this time?
Hmm?
Which company were you in? Had you moved at all?
I think I was still in D Company. I'm sure I was still in Company. Company Commander, D Company, and the Company Commander was a chap called Jeremy Thorpe. Now, he rose from the ranks, Captain Thorpe. He rose through the ranks and got permission during the war. He was our Company Commander.
Had there been any change in the battalion command?
I'm not sure. No. Ardine was still CO, because there were stories later on about Ardine. I mean, I think I mentioned somewhere in the past where from Khartoum he used to go on leave down to Africa on safari and things like that. Well, he was just as bad in Malta, but... But we, D Company, we were stationed in a place called Jebel Chanta, Inquisitor's Palace. That was it, Inquisitor's Palace. Actually, what it was like a chateau on the cliffside with a garden affair in front and the walls. And then we looked right across the Malta. So we had a good view of everything. The officers were in the building itself, the company, the sergeant's mess and the officer's mess was in there. We were in tents on the front, the garden affair in front. The peculiar thing about it is the tents were pretty safe, because, I mean, if you can imagine, these air raids used to last 72 hours sometimes. I mean, he used to come in and 88s and that 87s and bomb the harbour and then come up, and he used to pass over where we were, because that was the high part, and he used to pass over there because there was very little ak-ak up there, because there was nothing there. But the ak-ak from the harbour used to follow it, and we used to get all the shrapnel coming down where we were. And casualties, we had very few casualties, but in tents, for some reason, the shrapnel used to hit the tent and shoot off. It wouldn't penetrate. There was a few people who were hurt as ankle injuries and foot, because their feet was outside the tents, and the shrapnel come down. You know. Another thing I remember there was the toilets were dry, buckets, and there was a thing built of corrugated sheeting. I remember if you're sitting in there during the raid, the noise of shrapnel banging on the top, falling down. The water supply there, we were the highest part of the island, and used to bore down boreholes to draw the water from down in the rocks, and that was our supply for water.
Was there plenty of water?
No, it was rushing there. There was a little electric pump used to work it, and it was only on certain times. Actually, I went on a holiday a few years ago, and I went to see it, and the mechanical part, the pump, was still there when I went back. Of course, the other part had gone. The rations were starting to get very basic. We used to get bread when we first went there, so much bread, the quantities, tin bully beef, and eventually all the bread was finished and the flour went to the Maltese, and we lived on biscuits and bully beef. And we used to get examined every week by the MO, because with lack of food, lack of fresh food and all the rest of them, if you knocked anywhere, it used to fester. And it got worse all the time. It wouldn't heal. There was a little farm near where we were, and we used to pay a shilling, go up there at night time and pay a shilling, and you get a pint pot of what they call soup. What it was is cabbage, tomatoes and something stewed, and you called it soup. We used to go and get them. The sergeant's mess, they got a small pig from the Maltese, bought it, and they were sacrificing part of the rations each day and they're feeding the pig. And they used to go and watch it getting bigger and bigger, this pig, and they were going to have a right do when it got big enough. But one night it disappeared. Somebody stole the pig. And I remember I got a piece, so when he gave me a piece of the pork, and we used to cook stuff like that, we had a tin with a piece of tin underneath. One tin had water, one had all waste oil, and it used to drip onto this hot plate and flash. Just a little thing, like a cocoa tin. And that was around the back of the tents, and we cooking this bit of pig.
One of the men had stolen the pig?
Yes.
Did he ever get found out?
No, and we enjoyed the pig, but in the meantime, the sergeants and everybody were roaming around all over looking for, trying to find the pig. So we enjoyed the pig. In another instance, just lower down, there was this little farm where they had a piggery, the Maltese, and that's where these sons got their small pig. But one night during the raid, it got bombed, and we were called out, our company, to go down and to help to see if they could find any survivors from the Maltese family and that. And I remember the people were picking pieces of flesh up from the pig that had been hit, and they were wrapping it and putting it in their shirt, you see, to bring back. And again, we're cooking pieces and pieces, and then somebody said, I hope you realise they never found the farmer and his wife. So we don't know if it was pig, pork or not, but we ate it.
Did the was the officer's food any different from your own at all?
No, no, exactly the same. Exactly the same. The only thing they used to try and do, the cook for the officers, I think I mentioned once in the desert, this chap used to crush the biscuits up and try and make a pie crust. Well, he used to do that with the bully beef and make a pie for the officers. But we used to just get the basic.
Were you able to keep any cleaner?
Anyone?
You were quite dirty in the desert. Were you able to keep yourselves any
cleaner? Oh, yeah, we're cleaner there. The only trouble is in Malta, the Maltese people, through living, they practically lived in the shelters. I mean, they were deep underground shelters, and they lived there. They were covered in scabies, and you only had to be near them, you know, in the cafes or something like that, and you got this scabies from them. That was about all, but other than that, we're a lot cleaner. And our job there, every man had a push bike. This Jod's up here, I told you, at Blutcher Village, he was in charge of our company compound with all the push bikes. It was about 130 push bikes, and he had to keep them all working and doing. Well, I don't know if you've ever seen 1,000 men, a battalion, on the road on push bikes. I mean, some of them could never, like swimming, and never been on a bike in their life. And you get them going down the hill in 1,000, and one bloke lifts his feet up because wouldn't put on the pedals, and he'd collapse, and then the rest used to pile up behind him. And there's a right heap of bikes. But the idea why we all had push bikes was that they expect the Germans to drop paratroops onto Malta. And that's why we were up the top end and we had all positions dug and everything. And the idea being that we could move quickly around the island. I mean, all the other battalions had push bikes as well. And there was definitely other regiments there. And that was the idea, so you could move about. But I used to use it to go down. There's a little village called St. Dewey, just below where we were stationed. I used to go down there and drink the local ambeet. Well, ambeet is the cheap wine. They call it now in Malta, they call it the farmer's wine. When I went on holiday there about 8 or 9 years ago, I went up to this area and I went in a little cafe there in Rabat, and the Maltese were sitting around. I said, "A bottle of ambeet," and all the heads turned around. They'd never heard of that since the war time, you know. And they says, "Ambeet, that's farmer's wine," and you know. But anyway, I used to go down this little St. Dewey and drink that. And sometimes, if I didn't feel like climbing up the hill up top of Rabat, I used to stop at the police station, the local police station there. I knew the sergeant, and the police station was like a little fort with a parapet on the, like a wall on the outside. The inside was a courtyard, and the top of this wall affair was where you could walk round. And I used to go, you give me an old blanket, and I used to sleep there and lie down. And as the sun come up in the morning, there were thousands of flies used to come over. And then I had to climb up this bank to get back to the camp.
What leisure activities could you take part in?
Well, there was no sports or anything like that. We used to do a lot of training, exercises, you know, moving around, supposed to be a time. And of course, one of the main jobs there was Luka Aerodrome, that was the bomber drone. Jerry used to come over and bomb the runaway. Well, we had Wimpy's. That's Wellington's. We used to go out on raids, and of course Jerry would come in between them and bomb the runaways. And we had trucks full of rubble. We used to go over these trucks and collect the rubble from the bomb villetta and that, or the villages, and then we used to stand by near the airport, wait till after the raid, and then fill these bombed holes in on the runway so all planes could land when they come back off the raid. Well, there was a little cemetery near the Luka Aerodrome, and we found that we put the trucks in the drive of the cemetery. Now, their burial is like on steps, 6-foot steps, and they had like family graves where the gates, you open the gate and you went in, and they had three shelves either side, stone shelves, and had coffins on them, and that was for the different families with the four. So what we used to do at night time, we went down standby with the trucks. We used to rush to these places to get in the gates and find where there wasn't a coffin, where there's no coffin on the stone, and you maybe have one above you or one below, and you put your blanket on there, and we used to sleep in there because it was safer there than on top. Yeah? And we never used to worry about the bodies and coffins and that. As I say, we used to go out and fill the domes. Another thing is, we started building blast walls around the bombers on local aerodrome. We used to have petrol tins, four-bound petrol tins, fill them with sand or soil, and build a 16-foot wide, about 16-foot high, wall right round three sides of the bomber to stop the shrapnel damaging the bombers and the fighters. Of course, in the early days, when we did get convoys through, we had to go down and unload the convoys and get the stuff unloaded off the boats. Of course, as things got worse, the last convoy, it was about, well, they're going to give they're going to surrender the island, so we're told. In 1 week, if this convoy couldn't get through with food, there was no food left, so they were going to surrender the island, but we were going to try and get off by naval boats away. And there was a convoy left, Pedestal, left Gibraltar, and there's one convoy left, Alexandria. So they're going to try and get one convoy into Malta. The one from Alexandria had to turn back on account of the bombing, and the one from Gibraltar, there were 16 merchant ships and a lot of naval ships coming through. The Wasp, the aircraft carrier, was sunk. The Manchester cruiser was sunk. 13 merchant ships were sunk out of the 16. And there was a lot of destroyers sunk. There was two merchant ships managed to get into the harbour with the Ohio, which is an oil tanker. Now, this oil tanker, it was an American, brand new American oil tanker, and it was an American captain on it. He was only a young bloke. Now, I always remember it was coming in on a Sunday morning, come into the Grand Harbour, and all the population of Malta was up on the top of the buildings cheering when this convoy, what was left of it, come in, and the Ohio was sinking. It had been, the crew had left it twice out during the bombing, and the Navy went along with destroyers and put one either side to get it into the harbour.
Well, about what time was this? You would go to Malta about what date?
Actually, I think must have been about there about 10 months, I think. Must have been by then, I think.
Can you remember the time, the date that you went into Malta?
No, it must have been about January, I think, because we weren't long from coming from the desert. We didn't muck around Egypt, we were straight on, and that's what I said, Churchill's gift was to put us into another island during the siege.
And this this particular convoy was what, towards the end of the year, was it?
I can't remember now.
And you were actually there. Did you see these boats come in?
Yeah, well, we could see it from where we were. I mean, we had everything set up. This has been bombed all the time. I mean, it wasn't just sailing in. It was as they were coming in. Jerry was still bombing it all the way. They were going to sink it one way or another. And we were all standing by in the cliffs down near the harbour. And as soon as they come in, we had to get moving to get the stuff off. And we had dumps made all around the island. So instead of putting the stuff in buildings like they did before, we unloaded it straight onto trucks, and it was delivered and put on these dumps. Because the Maltese, each truck was loaded with stores from what we put on from the boats. A Maltese policeman sat on it, and he escorted to the dumps to see there was no pilfering. But, I mean, it was the daftest thing they ever do, because they were the worst than anybody. used to pay £1 for a pound bag of sugar before this convoy in Malta. And they were shoving the 100 weight bags off, and the Maltese was whipping it away, the black market. Yeah. That was the Maltese policeman.
So there's a lot of pilfering.
Yeah, by that, because there was a lot of black market going on by the Maltese. I mean, eggs were 2 and 6 each. You know. There was no pilfering by us, but there's one thing always stuck in my mind, and now when they hear about the Liverpool dockers, anybody, dockers during the war, the Maltese stevedores wouldn't come down during the bombing. They wouldn't come entertain it. That's why we were there. We had to try and use the derricks from the boats and get the stuff up. And we had these big crates, about 3 foot square, wooden crates, and we're unloading one, and the sling come off, and it fell down and broke open, and it was full of rubble from a bomb site. The dockers at Liverpool had confiscated the stuff out, filled it with bricks, and it was put onto these, and all them men lost their lives to get a thing of bricks. There was, if the dockers had been there, they would have shot them in Malta, you know, think of what went through.
You saw this crate, did you?
Oh, yes, I've seen that thing break open. And I've since read about a naval captain mentioned about the same thing, but he didn't mention about that. He mentioned about the dockers pilfering stuff from the cases. I mean, when they put such as boots, that they put all left boots in one big box and all right boots in another, to stop them pilfering the boots, this sort of thing. Of course, if a ship got sunk and you ended up with right-hand boots and no left-hand boots and all this sort of thing. But it was terrible when you know, to think what they went through to get that, and the people in Malta was waiting. That was the turning point from then onwards. Then we started getting bread again and bits and pieces like that, just from these three boats, these two merchant ships. And that seemed to be the turning point. And before that, the RAF, an aircraft carrier, left Jib with 50 Spitfires on. And they got as far as Pantelea somewhere, and the Spitfires had to take off and flew to Malta. And I think it was the limit of the with the petrol. So if any of them got any wrong direction, you know, they're lost. And we were on the drones with the RAF personnel helping. We waited for them coming in. And I remember it was a Sunday morning. As these Spitfires came in, they landed at Takali, which was a fighter drone. And we helped the RAF to immediately put new belts of ammunition on. Helped them to petal them up and thing, turn them around, and the mainly sergeant pilots on the Spitfire, they were still dressed with a Mae Western on thing and everything, and turned round and ready to take off again. And I remember one white-faced sergeant, he only looked about 18 to me, you know, and I says, you know, I was talking to him, I says, you flow this, eh? And you're going to shoot Jerry's down and whatnot. And I couldn't believe it. He looked so, you know, when you read more about it, found a different story altogether. But anyway, up to them 50 planes getting into Malta, we only had a half a dozen left, I think, of Spitfires and Hurricanes. They were right down to the dome. And Jerry used to come over and do what he wanted. And this time Jerry came over, and of course the Spitfires were already up. And it was a turning point, you know, they were tumbling out the skies. These young lads.
What did this kind of thing do for your morale?
Oh, boosted up no end, seeing that, seeing the difference, the turning round. Got some food to eat, and seeing some planes to oppose them.
Was the bad times in Malta, did they affect you know, the soldiers particularly at the worst times?
Well, again, with bombing, but the civilians got bombed just the same. But I think the idea of us was if we did get off the island, if Jerry decided to raid Malta, it was very little opposition compared to what he could put over, you know, from all Sicily and all the rest of it. The aerodrome was only 60 miles away, and he said, take off and bomb, go back, load up, and he had loads of... Kesselring was the bloke in charge there, the Yellow Nose squadrons of fighters, Messerschmitt. I remember one instance, we were told, packed with kit, small packs, were given bandoliers of ammunition, and were given the 48 Condress chocolate. That's the first time I've seen them, emergency ration, and like they had during the 14-18 war. It was condensed chocolate of some kind in a tin, and it's supposed to keep you going for 48 hours if you had nothing else. And you used to have a special pocket in your bottle that's built for to put them in. And we were issued with those, and we were taken down to the Grand Harbour, and there was a Manxman, which is a fast mine layer, and the Welshman, two boats, mine layers, used to do 41 knots per hour. And we put the gear on, and we were told we're going to make a raid. Our CO, our second in command, had been on a plane and flew over to Sfax in North Africa, which wasn't far away. And same, there was a big prisoner of war camp there, all British prisoners, Australians. And the idea was we were going to do a raid, our company, on these. We're going to do this run across to Sfax, land there, release these prisoners, and get them out, bring them back to Malta. So we're all ready, and then we're told to get off the boat again, off these boats, and go back up to the Rabat again, and hand your emergency rations in. Well, what had happened is some of the lads had opened the tin and ate the chocolate because they were that hungry, and filled it with soil and sealed it again. Of course, when they come back and they said, right, hand your rations in, they handed them in. Of course, they wouldn't open them to see whether it was chocolate or not. A week after, exactly, the same thing happened again. They give us these rations back again. Equipment, went down the harbour, got on the Manxman and Welshman. Already, it was cancelled again. Come back, somebody opened the tin and said it was soil in his. And they said, well, you shouldn't have opened it because you're only supposed to open them on the permission of the officer, some blooming thing. And of course, it all came out. Half of them were only blooming soil, and there was a red carrion. Well, what happened from our gather? The first raid was we're going to do, and then there was some rumours and it was cancelled. The second one was to catch, there was a Maltese captain, which was an Italian spy, and he was supposed to be given the information about all this, but he'd also given it to Jerry and everything, and the second one was to catch him out, and he was taken away, and I never knew what happened. But we never did do a raid on Sfax, which we thank the Lord we didn't.
What was the relationship between the troops and the civilians?
With the who?
Between yourselves, the troops, and the civilians. What were your relationships?
Not bad. Let's say we give the flour to the Maltese because, I mean, bread and cheese is about their stable diet, and wine. And we used to get on all right with them. With these bikes, I mentioned, I used to get in the morning and get on your bike and go about a mile and a half to a little village, and there was a Maltese baker there. He'd go near the door and look at him, and he'd nod his head, and when there's nobody there, he'd come out and he'd give you one slice of bread, and you'd give him a penny, and you wrapped it up in your hanky and stuck it in your shirt and sank it all the way back to camp. Of course, in the morning for breakfast, it was biscuits ground up into a porridge affair and tea. And that was your breakfast. Of course, people will keep on pulling pieces of bread out and they say, where'd you get that? and it was a different colour to what ours used to be, but it was a brownie colour. But it was lovely bread. I always did like the Maltese bread. And then, as I say, eventually the flour disappeared and the Maltese then were really on starvation diet. So that's why they're talking about that, to give the island up.
How bad did the rations get?
They got really bad. You know, they got really bad. As I say, it was affecting the health of the troops. I remember one instance. We were down Looker Aerodrome, and there was a plane came in from Alexandria. The rear gunner got out the back of this Wimby, and he had some sandwiches. The air crew got the sandwiches from the Wimby, and he tried to sell these sandwiches to us. There was another lot there. When they were flying from Alex, they used to bring, the bomber crew brought flour and lard and stuff in. And by the side of the airdrome, they were making chapatis and they were selling them to us. And the RAF padre got to know about it, and he went and confiscated the whole lot, you know. And it was terrible, he said, selling blooming stuff like that. But they were all on the mend.
Did you get any mail from...
No, never got any mail.